Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, March 21st. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, support builds for Humboldt campaign finance reform. Arcata City Council members discuss the mid-year budget report. And Governor Newsom pledges millions for 1,200 tiny homes across California. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. At its most recent meeting, Humboldt County Board of Supervisors took up campaign finance reform and a storm's emergency proclamation. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors is revisiting the issue of political financial influence and their support for lowering the cap on individual campaign donations from $1,500 to $500. The scale of campaign contributions is a long-time issue, and in 2014, the county approved an ordinance that sets the current $1,500 individual donation limit. Sponsoring a discussion at the March 14th supervisors' meeting, Board Chair Steve Madrone proposed the reduction as a way to further reduce the effects of campaign money.
There is a disproportion between candidates. You know, some folks are able to raise really big money with a lot of $1,500 donations. Mm-hmm. Others are not able to raise that kind of money. So my thought was, there's a lot of really incredible people out there in our community, and I'm sure that some of them are daunted to even consider running because of the cost to run and pay for ads and all that kind of stuff. So I just thought it would level the playing field a little better to make it 500.
Supervisor Rex Bone, who sponsored the 2014 ordinance, believes the $1,500 cap remains effective, especially with the effects of inflation.
$16 6 years ago is now $20. So with inflation and everything else, that $1,500, I know signs have doubled in price almost, I think. Everything's gone up. Advertising, everything's gone up. So for somebody who's going to do a countywide, and even to bring us down to $500, which is what the city of Eureka has to cover 4 square miles for a ward election and 3,000 voters when we have to have contact six or seven times, this kind of takes the argument out. $1,500 was low, according to, I looked around, it was a good number. A lot of people, again, don't have anything, but with inflation, $1,500 was a easy number. And I don't know what your discussion came up when you talked with Sheriff Hansel or any of the countywide election people, but that was a number that everybody could work with, be fair, and kind of chase out the big money.
Supervisor Michelle Bushnell has doubt about the reduction's effectiveness and said she doesn't support it. But Supervisor Natalie Arroyo said she often talks with community-minded people who are, quote, terrified about the idea of having to raise so much money to be able to compete, and she supports lowering the limit. With a split of opinions, Supervisor Mike Wilson said a smaller number would have more of an effect on incumbents than challengers, and he supports it. The discussion will continue, and supervisors directed county staff to analyze potential ordinance changes, including the maximum contribution amount. Also at the meeting, supervisors approved a proclamation declaring recent consecutive winter storm events as a local emergency. A series of storms beginning March 1st swept through the county with large amounts of snowfall in some areas, also flooding, downed trees and power lines, mudslides, and utility service disruptions. Roadways became impassable, and a variety of structures were damaged, with fixes exceeding available county resources, according to the proclamation. Sheriff Billy Hansel talked about Humboldt's wild winter and its effects.
Our county is still recovering from the earthquake, the January winter storms, and now these winter storms. Our county office of emergency services, our county services in general, and all the cities are really struggling to maintain right now. And that's why this disaster declaration proclamation is really, really important. And we have been included in the governor's state proclamation as well. And I know that governor's office and the OES is working to get our federal designation for these winter storms. And we believe that we will get that. based upon a lot of different factors throughout the state. And so we're thankful we haven't been as impacted as other parts in the state. The Central Valley, San Bernardino, other areas have really been affected, but we have our own issues and problems.
Supervisors praised the county's emergency and road crew responses, and Wilson said they've gotten rave reviews from his constituents. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Arcata City Council members discussed their mid-year budget report and a new kayak ramp set for the Arcata Wildlife Sanctuary. Narelle Devaney reports.
On Wednesday, March 15th, the Arcata City Council met to review their mid-year budget update, as well as a handful of other important topics. Among the other topics included a new kayak launch at the Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary in the South I Street parking lot. Construction will begin at the end of the month. David Case, Assistant City Engineer, explains.
It's not really a boat ramp. It's more of a kayak boat launch. It's got a gangway that goes out, and it's just a launch that floats up and down with the tides, supported by two piles. And it has some new parking improvements and some sidewalk improvements and stuff like that. So,
the mid-year budget update was given by Tabitha Miller, the City of Arcata's new finance director. Miller noted that the county's sales tax revenue indicates Humboldt County could already be in a recession state, which does not reflect the rest of California.
One of the things, if we've, and I don't know how much information you've gotten on the county sales tax, but something else that has happened is if you look over the last three quarters, if you go back to basically March through, April through June of 2022, county sales tax has been down pretty significantly. And it's really bad in the unincorporated areas. This happens to be just a snapshot at that top. It was 14.4% below the prior year quarter for the third quarter, which is July through September. The countywide, which is collected, it's the Bradley Burns tax that's collected, the 1% that's collected by the state all across the state, was only down 6.9%, but that's because you're taking into account your cities and not just the unincorporated area. Arcata, for that same period of time, was down 5.7%. And as you saw in the staff report, we are seeing that your sales tax numbers, both your TUT and your Bradley Burns 1%, are going to be slightly below budget, and they are going to be a little bit below last year. And that's probably a trend that we will look at carrying forward into the next fiscal year. Again, I'd rather be conservative there than overextend. The challenge here is that trend that's happening in Humboldt County doesn't seem to be happening in the rest of the state. The other, I think it's 13 counties that are reported in the north part of California, their average is up 0.9%, and that varies from Humboldt County at the bottom at a negative 6.9 all the way up to, I believe it's Del Norte County, that was up 13.5%. So they're not seeing the same trend that we are seeing. And I think, you know, there's certainly some assumptions when you look at the details that has a lot to do with the cannabis industry collapse. And California is up 8% across the board. So they have not seen any impacts yet like we are seeing here. I do make the statement here that I think we could probably say that Humboldt County probably is already in a recession based on those numbers. I will say that sales tax is not the same thing as gross domestic product, which is how you essentially figure out whether or not you've hit a recession. You have to have two quarters in a row where you've had negative GDP, and we just don't have that data available on our small scale.
Miller went on to encourage Arcata City Council members to pay attention to long-term budgeting for the 2023 to 2024 fiscal years and beyond. She emphasized the 4% increase in staff wages, which will be effective July 2023, recruitment challenges for public safety, continued cannabis industry challenges, and climate change as notable factors in upcoming budget planning. The council also discussed the loss of revenue coming from the transient occupancy tax, which is a tax charged in California to all rentals of 30 consecutive calendar days or less, such as a typical hotel stay. Five of the hotels in Valley West have been converted into housing, which makes them no longer qualify for the TOT tax. Two of these hotels have been transferred into the Home Key Project, which provides permanent supportive housing, and three have been given to Cal Poly Humboldt for student housing. This takes away approximately $550,000 from the TOT funds, a number worth noting when planning the future budget. For KMUD News, this is Naralee Devaney.
Hi, I'm Walter, and I want you to support KMUD News, because KMUD News gives us important information. You can support by calling 707-923-3911.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dessa, and I want to say KMUD is awesome. They save my life when I'm here trimming, because I don't live in the area, but whenever I'm here, it's the best radio station to listen to. Thank you so much. I support it, and y'all should too. All right, have a good one.
KMUD News brings your neighbors' voices to the airwaves, literally. When I hear someone's voice, I learn a little extra about their personality. I hear the emotion that forms their perspective. You don't get that reading an article. If you like listening to the news, keep independent community radio going. Call and contribute at 923-3911.
Clean California's Community Day celebration this Saturday, March 25th, will have something for everyone, as state officials include residents in the effort for Clean California. Lisa Music reports.
This Saturday, March 25th, is the Clean California Community Day celebration under the Samoa Bridge in Eureka from noon to 4 p.m. The family-friendly event is part of an 11-day volunteer service event and celebration that began on March 17th. The event is part of Governor Gavin Newsom's $1.2 billion Clean California initiative, which aims to reduce litter while providing jobs through events, cleanups, and educational programs.
I'm Julia Peterson. I'm the Clean California Coordinator and Project Manager for Caltrans District 1. Clean California Community Days is Caltrans inviting the community to join the movement towards cleaning California, taking pride in the community, and beautifying it. So we will be gathering under the Small Bridge and celebrating Community Day with about 50 different interactive booths. We'll have a lot of games and activities, all sorts of family-friendly things for people to explore around sustainability, pride in California, and keeping the community clean.
The program began in an effort to deal with trash accumulation that occurred during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Clean California program initiated cleanup efforts and is now turning to residents of California to keep California clean.
Up until now, Caltrans has been doing most of the Clean California litter picking and beautification, and now we're starting to involve the community. And so Community Days is the next phase.
Caltrans, through the Clean California Initiative, has been tackling some areas that historically have been littered with refuse, transforming the sites into areas residents can utilize and take pride in, a move that officials hope encourages residents to continue the effort as they reclaim public spaces.
It really is just like the broken window theory. You know, if you see that everyone else is dumping junk or you see litter everywhere, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal that maybe a piece of litter fell out of the back of your truck. That first piece of litter is really noticeable and people don't want to do that. So Clean California is using a combination of picking up litter, dump days to prevent litter, And Caltrans staff do litter stand downs twice a month to clean up litter. And the other thing we have is an adopt a highway stipend. So you get your name on the sign in the area you've adopted, and you also can qualify for a $250 stipend.
The celebration event this Saturday, March 25th, has a bit of something for everyone. The event will host live music earlier in the event featuring Nighthawk and Firesign, as well as a plethora of activities for the entire family.
By we'll have a touch a truck, so we will have a Caltrans loader and several other pieces of Caltrans equipment for people to explore and look at. Humboldt Bay Fire will be bringing a ladder truck. CHP will have a CHP vehicle, and Humboldt Transit Authority will have an electric bus. So everyone can have a look at some of these really exciting pieces of equipment, and the kids will be able to dip their hands in a washable paint and actually decorate the loader bucket. So we're expecting a lot of hands-on activities like that, chance to win fun, sustainable prizes. We've got 5 different mascots who will be there. If you'd like to have your picture taken with Safety Sam, the new Caltrans mascot, we'll have Chipper from CHP, Krusty Krab, Woodsy the Owl, and Captain Cal from Cal Fire.
Keeping it clean, organizers are encouraging attendees to use alternative transportation to the event and will be providing a bike valet. In addition to celebrating community cleanup efforts and sustainability, this will also be an opportunity for those wanting to work for Caltrans to learn about career opportunities.
If anyone is interested in working for Caltrans District 1, we will have a booth with hiring information and just lots of opportunities to learn about different ways to help keep California clean.
All are invited to join Clean California in inspiring actionable change in your community. Visit cleancalifornia.dot.gov/community-days to learn more and join the movement for a clean California for all. Visit dot.ca.gov/D1CLEANCA to see what's happening locally and how our community is transforming by partnering with the Clean California Initiative. For KMUN News, I'm Lisa Music.
In state news, Governor Gavin Newsom pledges $30 million for 1,200 tiny homes across the state. Christopher Martinez reports.
Instead of a State of the State speech this year, Governor Gavin Newsom is touring the state to lay out his agenda. For his first stop Thursday in Sacramento, the issue was homelessness.
I get it. You want to see progress, and you want to see it now. You want to see progress in terms of encampments. You want to see progress in terms of people off the streets. And as the mayor said, you want to see our values represented in that progress. No one's naive. It's not just about sweeping things under the rug or kicking people off the streets and sidewalks and claiming a job well done. That doesn't do justice to the injustice that is perpetuated because our inability to reconcile the larger issues of wealth and income inequality and all its forms and manifestations, the most acute, of course, the issue of homelessness.
Newsom's plan calls for building 1,200 tiny homes in 4 cities across the state to be delivered by the National Guard. Newsom says the cities will choose where to put the homes, and they'll be responsible for operating the tiny homes and related services.
No one's naive. It's not just about sweeping things under the rug or kicking people off the streets and sidewalks and claiming a job well done. That doesn't do justice to the injustice that is perpetuated because our inability to reconcile the larger issues of wealth and income inequality and all its forms and manifestations, the most acute, of course, the issue of homelessness.
The small homes will cost an estimated $30 million, with the money coming from already appropriated state funds. Building them is much cheaper than building permanent houses and much quicker. Los Angeles will get 500 units, San Diego will get 150, Sacramento 350, and San Jose gets 200. Matt Mahan is mayor of San Jose.
But when you look around the world at places that have gotten a handle on this challenge, it's because they've scaled up safe places for people to go, and that's our task ahead. So this commitment from the governor is going to enable us to accelerate basic, dignified housing for people who need it and start to end this era of encampments that we've been struggling with.
Of course, homelessness is not just a California problem. In England, Prince William said his late mother, Princess Diana, would be disappointed at the lack of progress on homelessness, an issue that she championed. Closer to home, Oregon's State House of Representatives Wednesday approved a $200 million package to address homelessness and housing. The same day as Newsom's announcement, California counties unleashed their own at-home plan on homelessness. It focuses on clearing up who's in charge of what. Graham Knaus is CEO of the California State Association of Counties. He says people have to be on the same page and know the rules and lines of authority.
This is a statewide crisis. It is not a crisis crisis in one community, in one county, in one city. It is a crisis throughout California, and we need to treat it as a crisis throughout California and to treat it like we treat all other priorities and programs, which is from a statewide leadership perspective where it's clear who's supposed to do what.
The county supervisors say they look forward to working with the governor and legislature on their plan. For his part, Governor Newsom is also looking forward to sending cities and counties $1 billion in the next round of homeless housing assistance and prevention funds, and to more ambitious goals for reducing homelessness.
And so today we have announced, and you heard from the secretary, the numeric goal. We went from 2%, which was lacking ambition, in terms of the last round of accountability, to 15%, which is progress. I'm looking forward to next year's accountability plans. And we have approved those plans. Remember, no money without a plan.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Major banks step in to avert failure of California's First Republic Bank. Eileen Alfandari shares this report.
San Francisco-based First Republic Bank received an emergency infusion of $30 billion in deposits from 11 major banks. J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo each agreed to put $5 billion in uninsured deposits into First Republic. Other major banks deposited smaller amounts of $1 to $2.5 billion. First Republic largely catered to wealthy clients, many of them billionaires, as did Silicon Valley Bank. That meant a high proportion of its accounts were over the $250,000 limit for FDIC insurance. In recent days, those large depositors began to withdraw their cash, risking a similar run as the one that crashed Silicon Valley Bank. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, and other top federal financial officials welcomed the move to stave off the collapse of First Republic and said it demonstrates the resilience of the banking system. Despite the deepening worry over the stability of the banking sector, Yellen told the Senate Finance Committee that depositors shouldn't worry.
I can reassure the members of the committee that our banking system is sound and that Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them.
Committee Democrats at the collapse of Silicon Valley and New York's signature banks demonstrated the folly of the 2018 Trump-era law that rolled back banking rules for mid-sized banks. Ohio Democrat Sherrod Brown pointed to the aggressive lobbying by the banks to achieve that goal. Similar, he said, to the lobbying by the railroad industry that led to weaker rules for its industry to catastrophic effect in East Palestine, Ohio.
It's the same thing when I think about the disaster in East Palestine. The railroad lobbyists continue just aggressively to lobby this body and to lobby the regulators, and they succeed in weaker standards for communities and for workers and for railroad safety. We see the same kind of aggressive lobbying from bank lobbyists to weaken standards.
But Republicans laid a big part of the blame for the bank's problems at the doorstep of President Biden. They said his policies caused high inflation that the Federal Reserve has tried to tame through higher interest rates, which caused the problem at the banks. The ranking Republican on the Finance Committee is Idaho's Mike Crapo.
Inflation played a key role in the recent bank failures as rising interest rates and mismanaged interest rate risk led to a liquidity crisis. Indeed, there is no issue more critical than the unacceptably high inflation that American families continue to face every day.
Crapo also said he was concerned about the precedent of the government appearing to guarantee deposits above the statutory FDIC limit of $250,000. Massachusetts Democrat Elizabeth Warren said we shouldn't have to be here in the first place and noted there was support from both Democrats and Republicans to weaken the banking rules in 2018. She said it's pretty obvious we need stronger rules.
You know, over the last few days, we've heard a lot of Republicans say that this collapse wasn't their fault. It was the banking regulators who were asleep at the wheel. And believe me, I have questions for a lot of the banking regulators. But Congress handed Chair Powell the flamethrower that he aimed at the banking rules.
In a New York Times opinion piece, Warren has said that while investors in Silicon Valley and signature banks will be wiped out, their executives must also be held accountable. She wrote that Silicon Valley Bank's CEO took home $9.9 million in compensation last year, including a $1.5 million bonus for boosting bank profitability and its riskiness, she said. The CEO of Signature Bank got $8.6 million. Warren said that, quote, we should claw all of that back along with bonuses for other executives at these banks. Where needed, Congress should empower regulators to recover pay and bonuses, she wrote. I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
In national news, lawmakers unveil a new bill to ban red dye number 3 and 4 other toxic chemicals in food. Ellie Prickett Morgan reports.
In grocery stores across the U.S., 5 known toxic chemical compounds, all of which are banned in the European Union, lurk on the ingredient lists of popular food items. The chemicals in question are red dye number 3, titanium dioxide, potassium bromate, brominated vegetable oil, and propylparaben. State Assemblymember Jesse Gabriel says that they represent the worst of the worst in terms of adverse health impacts. Gabriel is introducing legislation to ban the sale and distribution of products containing these ingredients in the state of California.
Part of the real motivation behind this bill is protecting kids. Many of these chemicals are included in food and candy that are specifically marketed and targeted toward kids, in many cases disproportionately targeted towards kids in Black and brown communities. And we know that kids are at heightened risk. We know that their brains are at a critical stage of development, and so the toxicity from these chemicals is a really, really concerning thing for a lot of us.
Research has linked the 5 chemical compounds with cancer, behavioral problems in children, and adverse effects to the nervous and hormonal reproductive systems. While European countries have successfully banned the sale of these chemicals in food, they remain readily available in U.S. foods due to a loophole in the Food and Drug Administration's regulatory process. Since 1958, the FDA has allowed food and chemical companies to self-certify the safety of ingredients that are generally regarded as safe, now commonly referred to as GRAS foods. This was initially intended to exempt foods that had a long history of safe usage from being forced through a rigorous regulatory process. Fast forward a couple decades, and companies have used the GRAS loophole to push through thousands of unchecked foods and chemicals, like the ones Gabriel wants to ban. Emmy Award-winning chef Andrew Zimmern, a supporter of Gabriel's bill, says he was shocked as a person working in the food industry by the extent of the FDA's regulatory failures.
Now, there are food and chemical companies out there that will say, let the FDA handle this. But those same companies have rigged the food chemical review system to put the fox in charge of the hen house. Since 2000, 99% of the food chemicals that have been added to the food supply were reviewed for safety by the chemical companies, not the FDA. Let me repeat that. Since 2000, 99% of the food chemicals that have been added to the food supply were reviewed for safety by the chemical companies and not the FDA. Waiting for the FDA to do its job is not an option.
For many food products that would be affected by the ban, Gabriel and other legislators say they are simply asking that manufacturers use alternative dyes or compounds, some of which are even cheaper than the 5 being banned. Both Coca-Cola and Pepsi have already transitioned out of using brominated vegetable oil, a compound which would be banned by AB 418. While AB 418 has received positive feedback from doctors and other state legislators, Gabriel says they have received pushback from food chemical manufacturers, who argue that the state legislature is overstepping its bounds with this new legislation. Scott Faber, the senior vice president of government affairs for environmental working groups, says that the FDA is underfunded and isn't even sticking to their own commitments. He says in the 1990s, red dye number 3, which AB 418 would ban, was banned by the FDA in makeup and skincare products. Although the FDA was expected to ban the dye from food, it never did.
For the reason why, I think it's, starting in the mid-80s, this deregulatory environment came in, and that made it much harder for the FDA to do things. So I think that's in part why they never followed through, because there wasn't enough will with both within the agency and not enough pressure coming from the outside for them to continue.
For Faber, AB 418 is a chance to rectify the failures of the FDA and protect consumers from dangerous products. The bill is currently awaiting a committee hearing. From Oakland, for KPFA, I'm Ellie Prickett Morgan.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Lisa Music, Narali Devaney, Christopher Martinez, Eileen Alfandari, and Ellie Prickett Morgan. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.